AM 820.
Relationships. I could use some help with my relationship.
And my teenagers.
Oh, yeah, like with my husband.
And with my boss.
How do you figure it all out without losing yourself?
That's the question. The most important questions of your life. The answers are here. We'll work on them together. This is the Dr. Liz Hale Show on Utah's new AM 820. Now, here's clinical psychologist Dr. Liz Hale.
And welcome to our second hour of our program today. Good having you aboard. 470-570-670-1820. Now, those are very important numbers because those are the numbers to get onto the show. I'd love hearing from you. Our topic today is on homosexuality. It is about dialogue. It's not about hate. It's not about debate. It's dialogue only. We have some guests who are very generous to share from their heart their stories. They are mothers, they are sons, they are daughters, and they have different experiences. There was a Dr. Simon LeVay who was very instrumental in some of the research regarding, are we born that way? He himself is a gay activist, and he studied the hypothalamic differences between the brains of homosexual and heterosexual men. And he states here, it's important to stress what I didn't find. I did not prove that homosexuality is genetic, or find a genetic cause for being gay. I didn't show that gay men are born that way, the most common mistake people make in interpreting my work, nor did I locate a gay center in the brain. What is clear is that the scientific attempts to demonstrate that homosexual attraction is biologically driven has failed. It's not purely genetic. Environment factors certainly play a role. There's not a single master gene that makes people gay. So I doubt that we'll ever predict who will be gay. Does it mean that biology doesn't have a part? I can't say that it doesn't. I can't imagine that it doesn't. But there's not a gay gene, if you will. So many things complicate who we are. What we know from the research is that sexuality is fluid. And it can change. Some people choose to. Some people choose not to. I want to welcome to the studio a lovely mother, Janice Barrett Graham. Welcome, Janice.
Hi, thank you.
So good having you here.
Thanks.
Your family had sent me the book, My Darling from the Lions, a book that you wrote
right
because of your son's, Drew, his experience being a young man,
mm-hmm,
wondering about his own sexual identity.
Right.
Feeling that, you know what, I think I'm gay, mom and dad.
Right.
And there was also some pornography addiction and some concerns mm-hmm around that.
Right.
Let's talk about your story. How many kids do you have and which number is Drew?
We have seven, and he's,
wow,
smack in the middle.
Is he?
Yeah.
Talk about his life, please.
Well, he's one of those sweet boys who is enthusiastic about life. He's very artistic. He came into the world, I think, that way. He loves music and art. In fact, he just graduated with a degree in animation. And
good for him.
Yeah. And he's always loved beautiful things. And I think that's, we need people like this in the world. We wouldn't have any artists or, you know, any male artists anyway.
Yes, amen to that.
And
yet he was different. Those aren't very popular traits for young boys to have.
Not
was he teased quite a bit?
Yes. There was a lot of peer abuse because he sang the loudest in the choir,
oh,
and he smiled the most. And
Janice, what were some of the terms people gave him?
He was called a sissy and a fag and gay, you know, when that became more popular.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a little boy starts to wonder if he's a real boy, if people call him names like that. And he did start to wonder.
Must have broken your heart.
It was really difficult.
I can still see that it hurts as you think back.
Yes, and it was hard to know if you should intervene because sometimes that makes it worse.
Yes.
And so we went the rounds. It was difficult.
I remember seeing something where you did intervene and the abuse became escalated.
Yes.
Among his peers.
That often happens.
Was he ever beat up?
Physically shoved and things like that, but I think the hardest and worst thing was the psychological abuse. You know, that's a lot of people say who are abused say that's more painful than the than the physical abuse.
We're going to bring Drew on a little bit, but do you think he's recovered from that?
Yes,
psychological.
That's the wonderful hope that our message has, that we don't have to remain victims. We don't have to have a victim mentality. We can rise above. How people treat us doesn't have to scar us for life.
I know some people who have never recovered from abusive childhoods.
It's very, very difficult, and they often need a lot of professional help.
How did you have six other children, how do they respond to the kind of guy, boy, that Drew was?
That he was,
mm-hmm.
and is? He's...
When he was in the family, when you were all at home,
okay,
is what I was referring to.
Loved him to pieces. I mean, he was a kid, just, you know, there was squabbles and things like that, but we all appreciated his wonderful talents, and to us, he was just Drew, you know. There was nothing wrong with his masculinity. There was nothing wrong with anything about him. I mean, a person's hobbies and interests have nothing to do with their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So to us, we just couldn't understand. Well, I guess that's not fair to say. We could understand because of the trends and the stereotypes that our society has. I mean, if he'd lived 100, 150 years ago, he would have been thought of as perfectly masculine.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you have to like the sports. You have to be good at the sports. And I've heard even some guys today pretend to like sports because they're afraid they'll be labeled.
Isn't that
as
sad?
Gay. And does that's really sad.
Speak well of our society, does
no,
it?
No, it's not. We have
how
problems.
How would you have described him as a boy? You said artistic. Did he have kind of a strong feminine side, would you say, as far as being sensitive?
If you want to call it feminine, I think men can be perfectly masculine.
I think we all have both.
Yes,
we all do.
And men can be perfectly masculine and yet be very gentle, mm-hmm. tender, sensitive people. In fact, I think that's what makes the best kind of man.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But you know, I tell you, we don't really celebrate that in our men.
No, and that's what a wife will want. That's what any woman would want for a husband.
Sometimes.
Who will listen to her and chat with her. And
exactly.
I mean, I heard your show yesterday,
yes,
and a lady
yes.
was saying, my husband doesn't let me talk as much as I need to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what men see. That's what's so wonderful about the complementarity between men and women. We can learn from each other and develop our personalities and our talents and all of that to accommodate each other,
sure.
and become better people.
How old was Drew when he came to you, Mom, and said, guess what, I am a homosexual, I am gay?
Well, he didn't ever say I am gay, but he said, I have to tell you some things. He was 18,
okay.
almost 19. Actually, we knew that he had troubles before that because we had caught him looking at same-sex pornography. But we just didn't know how to react. We just thought, oh my gosh.
How old was he when he was experimenting with same-sex pornography?
That was 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was after he actually experimented personally that he said, I'm miserable and I want some help. He voluntarily chose to fight it.
Did he ever experiment with homosexuality? Did he ever
yes,
have a partner?
To a degree. And it was with three different instances, three separate events with three different people who were much older than him. And that's often the case we're finding.
Hmm. I was going to bring Drew on here to our show by pushing another button. Hi, Drew, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Drew. You're live with Liz and your mom.
Hi, Drew.
Hi.
So glad that you could join us today. Did you hear us?
I did,
burning. We're talking about you and your story. And you've written a manuscript yourself.
I have.
When will that be published, Drew?
Probably before the summer. It's just in the final stages of editing and getting some endorsements and things. So.
How old are you now? How old are you now, Drew?
I'm 24. I'll be 25 in March.
So. Very good. We kind of left off talking about your experimentation with homosexuality. Will you kind of pick it up from there?
Sure. You know, like Mom said, I got involved with some same-sex pornography, and it's kind of an interesting route that I took. It just kind of progressed in different ways, like different mindsets of what I looked at and my rationalizations and saying, well, I'm a man, and so looking at men is not such a big deal because there's no surprises there. And so I rationalized my way all the way through to the end. And then when I got there, it just escalated into other forms because, you know, I would get caught and then say, well, I'm not going to do this anymore. But then ultimately just had to find my way back. There was just a really strong drive that I always would find myself back there. And then it escalated into other formats. Like, I got involved in chat rooms and other kinds of, you know, talking, emailing people, calling people, you know, talking to actual people. It wasn't just images, and it was live interaction. And that is where I got involved with some firsthand experiences and, you know, with practically strangers. And that was the problem I ran into there. It just, it's kind of like it was leading up to this point that I could never have foreseen, but it just got to that point. And then, I don't know, it's almost like, I wasn't expecting it, but it just happened. And I, you know, I knew it was like, I shouldn't go there. They're strangers for all I know. They could be killers, you know, but it just sort of happened. And I felt like, you know, I felt like, what am I doing here? This isn't who I am. And then I'd be good for quite a while, you know, several months I'd be all right. And then the draw would be really strong again, bring me back there. And then it happened a couple more times. And finally, after the third experience, that's what made me realize, you know, I had a call to serve a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I realized this isn't what kind of a missionary I want to be. I don't want to have this baggage, you know. So I said, I just have to come out and tell my parents, because, you know, it was, and it's not fair to say that it wasn't exciting, because it's just, it was, you know, it's something like sexual experiences like that, In any kind, can be exciting, even if you know they're wrong. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I can only imagine. So, I'm believing what you're saying.
Yeah. So it's like I knew it was wrong, but it was still exciting. So it was kind of a really hard line to draw. Like, well, and I did wonder, well, is this who I am? Because it was interesting and exciting, but it felt wrong at the same time. And then I thought maybe it's just new. And then I thought, no, because there's just something in my spirit that tells me this isn't right. So
this was nothing about it that felt like I am finally home. All that sissy boy, all that teasing I did, and then to experiment with another man, there was nothing about it that said, ah, maybe this is me.
You know, not really, because when I was young, that all that kind of stuff, all the teasing and things, was just so superficial, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And outward and kind of uncomplicated. And then when I got involved with this, it was just so deep, and it was completely different on a different level. Do you know what I mean? It was,
wow.
Well, for one thing, it was almost completely sexual, in my experience at least. So it was, it wasn't about identity really. It was just about physical things. So it was really interesting how they were so different. But that's just in my experience at least. There was quite a different feeling from that, and I didn't be like, oh well. Because I was teased as I was when I was young, this must be who I am.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of separate. You know?
I see. I understand. What was the final straw? What was the thing for you, Drew, that said, oh my gosh, I need help?
Well, the third experience I had was with a man who was much older. He was a church member. He, you know, he was endowed in the temple. He had taken all these really sacred covenants, and this was made evident to me. And he was married, and I realized how deep I had gotten myself in. I mean, this was a person who was a total stranger, as the others were, you know. And I realized, you know, this isn't healthy, this isn't right, this isn't, you know, uplifting or promising or anything. There was just something intrinsically wrong in my heart that was happening here. You know, there was no commitment, there was no, mm-hmm. There was no emotion, there was no anything mm-hmm. except, you know, just
a sexual,
mm-hmm. yeah, physical sexual pleasure. And I thought, you know, this is no way to live, to just be living from one sexual experience to the next. You have to have emotions, you have to have you know, connection, you have to have a heart and a mind and a spirit. You know, it's not just a body, it's not just pleasure. And so, and then I thought, plus I'm really young, and I had this mission call, and I said, something told me also that, you know, it's actually an interesting thing. The last thing I remember before I came out and told my parents was we went to a dedication for one of the church's temples, and I had a, you know, those, it's pretty spiritual experience usually, but I didn't really feel much there, and I thought, this isn't wrong, I should be having, you know, I should be feeling the spirit here, I should be feeling something, and all I could think about was the things I had done, and the rut I was in, and what I was thinking about doing later, you know, just like, it was just like, this constant thing on my mind, and I thought, this is no way to live. I have to have, you know, I have to have my spirit right. I have to have my heart right. I have to be honest with my family and friends. You know, I was just, I'm telling them one thing, doing another thing. I think it, basically it was just a culmination of everything, and then that temple experience, and I realized that everything was just completely wrong, and I had to do something.
I can only imagine that the that the missionary call was no more. I'm sure that was taken away. We're going to talk about where you are today and your future when we come back. Welcome to AM820. I'm Dr. Liz Hale here. It's a pleasure for me to welcome Janice Graham and her son, Drew Graham. We're talking about homosexuality today.
Watching over me.
Welcome back to AMA 20. I'm Dr. Liz Hale. Lauren Buckman and I, we're here Monday through Friday, 9 to noon. It's a pleasure to have you aboard. We're visiting with Janice and Drew Graham. Hi, Drew, are you back? Hello. It's just me. It's the operator, of course. I'm a psychologist, not really a board operator. Okay, Drew? I'm so glad that you're a part of our show today. I wanted to ask you, so you have gone from then tendencies feeling homosexual, going to the chat rooms and having those three experiences, being scared to death, realizing that it sounds like you were very immersed in the LDS religion. And that was going to be a huge loss for you.
Yes.
Was that pretty motivating at reaching out, saying, I wonder, can I change it? Can I make a shift here?
Yes. You know, not really. I mean, at first, that was the thing I said, well, this is not how I was raised. This is not what I believe. But then as I went along, I realized it was a lot more important than that. It wasn't just a cultural thing. It was something really personal and spiritual. And I thought, this has something to do with, you know, the where I live and how I was raised. But it mostly has to do with my spirit and my relationship with Jesus Christ and my Heavenly Father. And so that was the major motivation, that when I realized that, you know, the cultural thing was enough to motivate me to stop and to analyze and to, you know, say, weigh the decisions I was making. But the personal and spiritual reasons were what really motivated me to actually make the change and to realize that something had to change. So,
how do gays treat you today when you acknowledge that I made a change?
Oh, you know, it's a very, very unpopular thing to say that homosexuality, can be overcome. There's usually one of two reactions. One is that, oh, well, you were just experimenting and you were never gay. You just realized that's not who you were. Or you are gay and now you're just covering it up. Or you're, you know, hiding who you really are. The idea that it can be overcome is almost unthinkable to a lot of them. Because then it puts a lot more responsibility on you. You can say it gives you a lot more choice, and sometimes they don't want that, not because they wouldn't want to be gay. It's just really hard to overcome it, especially in the society where it's so often told that it's perfectly fine and it's something that everyone should embrace, you know. And I should point out right from the start that I do have friends who are living a homosexual lifestyle, you know, people who I love very much, and I don't disvalue them as people at all. You know, I love them very much. They're children of God just like I am. But at the same time, I don't have to approve and appreciate of their behavior. I mean, everyone has friends who do things they don't like, you know, sexually and not.
Do they approve of your behavior?
You mean having overcome homosexuality? Or?
Yes, living a heterosexual lifestyle. Do your homosexual friends approve of that?
You know, they are really careful not to discount my personal experience, but at the same time, there's just not a lot of respect given to that, to this side. You know, overcoming homosexuality is so much more taboo now than just accepting it. And so they say, you know, well, that's fine for you, but that doesn't mean it's true. You know, it doesn't mean it's true for anybody else. So it's kind of interesting how it turns around. It's like they demand tolerance for their beliefs, but when it comes to mine, they're like, well, go right ahead, but there's no way I'm going to believe that. It's just kind of an interesting, you know, parallel.
That is interesting. Does anyone challenge you today, Drew? They say, you know what, I think you're still gay, Drew.
Yeah, actually, I was working in Florida for a semester, and a couple of people approached me, and they were saying, well, you know, I have a question, and I kind of knew because I don't know what it is.
You've been down that road before.
Yeah, rumors fly, and they, you know, stereotypes, of course, and things. So I kind of already knew what they were going to ask, and he said, well, are you gay? And I said, no, I'm not, actually. But you know, I don't say, no, I'm not, and I think that it's wrong. I just say, no, you know, and conversational about it. And if he asks, I'll tell him what I believe, but I'm not going to, you know, shove it. And then he says, you know, it's funny because a lot of times I'll say that and then it's like they don't really believe me, or they think that I'm not being dishonest with myself, and they will ask me out anyway. I'll say, no, thanks, I'm not interested. But,
do you understand, Drew, what is it about you that people would say, I think you're still gay?
I don't know. Well, I do know, but I don't agree. I'll tell you, it's like my mom was saying earlier, I think there's a lot of stereotypes and things that people think that if you are a certain way or behave a certain way or like certain things, it generally means you're a homosexual. And I think those things are, like, diminishing in prevalence a little bit, but generally, I mean, I'm not extremely masculine. I don't love sports. You know, I'm an artist. I love to sing. You know, it's just, I talk with my hands. I mean, it's just a lot of things. You know what I mean? It's like, it's physical attributes that doesn't really have anything to do with my identity. It's just like, how I behave, you know, and it's funny that people just automatically assume these things. And I say, well,
yeah.
I mean, the stereotypes are there because a lot of times they're true, but that doesn't mean that they're always true, and it doesn't mean they should be propagated, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Who are you dating today? Let's talk about your dating life.
I'm kind of in between girlfriends right now. I was dating a girl pretty seriously before the summer, and I've been meeting a couple of girls lately, but I'm actually not trying to get into a relationship right now because I have plans to serve a mission in the future, so...
I'm really thrilled for you.
Thank you, and I'm really excited too. And
I think that's great.
I'm going to have that blessing to serve. So.
Wonderful. What are the women you've dated? You've obviously brought this up. I mean, you're writing a manuscript; it's going public.
Mm-hmm.
What's their feedback?
It's really interesting. And I was going to Brigham Young University, of course, and a lot of my friends had read it. And well, they read Mom's book first, and they're looking forward to reading mine. And we haven't really distributed it yet in that capacity, but. I was kind of nervous at first to what kind of response this was going to get, because it's pretty much every little thing, you know, the details you don't usually tell on just friends and things. But as far as my friends and girls I'm dating go, and even like roommates, you know, guy friends and things, it's been a really positive response. You know, it's kind of an unorthodox view that this is the kind of thing that can and should be overcome. So when you read something like that, that's really faith-affirming and really Christ-centered, and it's about how change of any kind is possible, you know, sexually or of any kind of personality trait that is unpleasant or something you want to overcome, it's really encouraging to them, and they're really supportive and really, you know, encouraging. They don't, there's no stigma attached to that because they know it's so far a part of my past, but it's just really encouraging to have friends who, you know, realize that the power of Christ is so strong and really can help you to overcome even this kind of, you know, serious social even issue, you know.
Okay, last question. I know people are going to be asking and wondering, Drew, so when you see a handsome man, is there any attraction?
Well, here's the thing, okay? I think that people are attracted to people, and I think that it's a really common misconception nowadays that a man can't tell when a man is handsome. And, you know, I might not be sexually attracted to him, but I see an actor and I say, well, I understand that he's good-looking, and I can understand why... you know, anyone would think that he's good looking. It doesn't mean I'm sexually or physically attracted to him. I can recognize a guy with a nice body or a good looking face, just like I can recognize a woman does, but it doesn't mean that I, you know, am physically. That's the problem, I think, that a lot of times we can't separate just a person's worth and image from, like, just sexual aspects of them. We just are so kind of sexualized in society, so that's what people automatically think. So.
Yeah, Mom, you had a comment.
Yeah, Drew, remember when you were in therapy, you learned that you can appreciate beauty in
all forms.
Yes, without sexualizing it. And you had through all that pornography and those wrong thought patterns, you had forgotten or unlearned or learned that you sexualized everything, and
exactly.
And then in the therapy you learned how to unlearn that.
That's amazing.
And we should all do that. We should all treat people as human beings and not sexualize.
Mm-hmm. Drew, I want to thank you so much for being a part of our show today. We're going to take a break and come back with your mom. I wish you well. Good luck on your Mormon mission.
Thank you very much.
Send us the book when you get it published, and we'll put the information on our website for anyone who wants to know more about you. Bless you, Drew.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care now.
Bye.
I'm Dr. Liz Hale, 470-570-670-1820. I'll be back more with Drew's mom, Janice, I'm sorry, Barrett Graham. Forgive me, Janice. Her book is My Darling from the Lions. We're going to talk just a little bit more with you, but stay close. I'll be right back after this. welcome to AM 820. It's so nice having your company here on the Dr. Liz Hale Show as we talk about homosexuality. My guest right now, of course, is Janice Barrett Graham, her book, My Darling from the Lions. So just a few more minutes. I know we've just got other guests that are scheduled. Our time is running out, Janice, but if you want to know more about Janice's book, check out utahama20.com. We'll put the links on there, how you can get that book. But your story is a very painful one. This process was not easy on you and your family.
No.
And pornography, you felt, had a great deal to do with this.
Yes. My son's therapist said that if he had not been addicted to same-sex pornography, he would not have had a problem with homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a huge... Pornography changes, it affects the way you think about human beings and about sexuality.
Do you think his personality made him vulnerable?
Yes, I think some personalities are more sort of addictive or obsessive. I want to point out, though, that the pornography, the internet, was brand new when he was about 15.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even, of course, we got it, we hooked up to it. We didn't even know that you could link to pornography.
You didn't know how to use it either, right?
No,
I remember as an adult, it's like, oh my gosh, I fought tooth and nail going into the internet computer
So we didn't know that our vulnerable 15-year-old was being linked and lured. Actually, he was confused about his masculinity from all the peer abuse, and he started by looking at muscle men, and that linked straight to written pornography, and then pictures, and then chat rooms, and etc.
We're going to go to Jennifer's call in just a minute, but you are a fan of gender-affirming therapy.
Yes.
You felt that therapy was really helpful for Drew.
Oh, yeah.
To embrace who he was, which you as a family, and Drew, I think, was saying that I really am, I always have been, a heterosexual male.
Mm-hmm. He had a wonderful psychotherapist. It only took him about 6 or 7 sessions. He said everything in Drew's manuscript, he says everything that Dr. Robinson said just made sense to me all of a sudden. Well, not all of a sudden, but in this process, although it didn't take as long as you might think. There's a lot of causes for homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And in our case, they were more easily rooted out than you might think.
You can learn more about that from the book, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You felt like you did some things wrong as a parent.
Oh, yeah. I could have been more affirming of his masculinity as a mom. His dad could have been. We could have helped him better with the peer abuse. Sometimes we intervened and it made it worse. You know, it's hard to look back, but you have to. If you want to root out a problem that you don't want in your life, you have to go back and go through the painful process.
Would you have embraced your son had he stayed homosexual?
Yes, that crossed my mind. Every scenario crossed my mind. I didn't know much about it at the time. There wasn't that much written, or I couldn't find access to it.
Sure.
And I really just had to go with my gut feelings of right and wrong, and then spent a lot of time on my knees. It was really a spiritual journey for me.
I can hear that,
because I learned unconditional love.
Because it's a fascinating book, and we want people to know more about your book. Go to utahama20.com. Jennifer, hi, you're live with Liz. Welcome to AM 820.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
I wanted to bring up something. Everything that Drew has been talking about has been focused around this sexual relationship that he's been having in the homosexual realm. And what I wanted to bring up was, I myself also was raised Mormon. I went to BYU, I went on a Mormon mission, and I am a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
And my issue was that I would fall in love emotionally with women over and over, and that I actually was unable to do that with men. And I think that we need to recognize, in talking about pornography, talking about these things, that whether you're homosexual or heterosexual, you may take the route of sexualizing your relationships in an unhealthy way.
Mm-hmm.
Or you may choose to integrate that and have what we all know as love, which is being emotionally intimate with someone as well as having a sexual relationship. And that happens for heterosexuals.
I was going to say, I think we can all relate to that, Jennifer. Absolutely. How is your life today?
My life is wonderful today.
Are you in a relationship with someone special?
Yeah, and I think that we just need to not categorize homosexuality as this very sexual deviant thing that you become that way because you looked at pornography. For one thing, if a 15-year-old boy who's straight and he was looking at pornography, he'd pull up heterosexual porn, and that might not be a healthy route for him to go.
Mm-hmm.
But a gay 15-year-old may start looking at homosexual pornography, and that may not be a healthy route for him to go, because they're sexualizing it and making it disconnected from their emotional
mm-hmm.
love ability.
So, Jennifer, also, are you kind of challenging the fact that maybe Drew, is he really a straight heterosexual male?
You know, I think everyone has the absolute right to follow their heart and be true to themselves. And so if that is what is being true to Drew's self, I applaud him. But we have to also give that to everyone, that you have to be true to yourself. That's what finally turned for me, is I needed to be true to who I was, to have integrity and to recognize that I could live a full, healthy, integrated life as a lesbian woman.
I am so glad you called the show. Jennifer, thank you so much. I'm Dr. Liz. Please stay close. Thanks again, Janice Graham, for being here, my darling from the lines. You can check that out on UtahAM820.com. More calls, 470-570-670-1820. And the email, LizH@UtahAM820.com. We'll be right back. And welcome back to AM 820. Dr. Liz Hale here, 470-570-670-1820. Again, this is just about dialogue. It's not about debate. I think we all just need to get along and have our differences and our beliefs in this, and yet offer some respect and support. You had a comment to our last caller, Mom. Go ahead, Janice.
Yeah, I wanted to respond. I think that she and I have a different worldview. My worldview is that homosexuality is not a good choice. It's not a productive way of life. It's actually harmful physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And if you don't have that worldview, of course, you're going to have a totally different reaction to homosexuality. So,
okay. Thank you so much for being here, sharing your book. Bless you.
We will
visit again. Janice, again, that was Janice Barrett Graham, my darling, from the Lions. Everyone has such a strong view about this, don't they? I mean, that's the beauty of having our station AM 820. Goodbye, Janice. Please take care now. That was a delightful 3 hours. I'm so grateful for my guests. Thank you so much to Janice Graham, her son Drew. So grateful for your voices. Thank you for callers. We'll have more information put on our website so that you can get in touch with some of the groups supporting your belief system. Either way, it's all about dialogue. I hope that you've learned a lot. I certainly have. See you Monday.
You're not alone when you have someone to listen to your problems. It's Live with Dr. Liz Hale on AM 820, KUTR, Taylorsville, Sandy, Salt Lake City.
AM 820.